The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
As you'll have just heard from Shane in the news, two Israeli diplomats have been killed in a shooting in Washington, D.C. The diplomats were attending a reception for young diplomats hosted by the American Jewish Committee at the Capitol Jewish Museum. One man has been arrested, is said to have chanted "Free, free Palestine" when taken into custody. At a press conference earlier, the Israeli ambassador to the United States had this to say about the victims of the shooting.
The couple that was gunned down tonight in the name of Free Palestine is a young couple about to be engaged. The young man purchased a ring this week with the intention of proposing to his girlfriend next week in Jerusalem. They were a beautiful couple who came to enjoy an evening in Washington's cultural center. I will say this, we are a resilient people. The people of Israel are resilient people, and the people of the United States of America are resilient people. Together we won't be afraid, together we'll stand, and we're going to overcome moral depravity of people who think that they're going to achieve political gains through murder. On the way in, Ms. Bondi was kind enough to hand me the phone. On the other line was the President of the United States, Donald Trump, who told me that his administration is going to do everything it can possibly do to fight and end anti-Semitism and the hatred that's being directed, the demonization and delegitimization of the State of Israel. Together with President Trump, our Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, will stand together tall and firm, and we will confront this moral depravity without fear and with determination. And now we'll turn to taking care of the families of these two victims.
And that is the Israeli ambassador to the United States, Ambassador Leiter. Well, joining us for the latest on this, Terry Sheridan, Senior Director of News at WSHU Public Radio. And for analysis, Scott Lucas, Professor and Political Analyst at the Clinton Institute at UCD. So, Terry, we'll go to you first to bring us the latest on this shooting, which, of course, must have shocked Washington.
Oh, shocked Washington. It also shocked the greater United States. It happened a little after 9 o'clock local time last night. And the couple who have been identified as an American and an Israeli, the American woman, Sarah Lynn Milgram, the Israeli diplomat or young diplomat, Yaron Leshinsky, were in a group of four when they were leaving this event at the museum. They were approached by the man. Now, right now, we don't know if anything was said. The suspect, 30-year-old Elias Rodriguez, was from Chicago. After the shooting, he actually walked into the museum looking disheveled. People at first thought that he needed aid and were bringing him water before they realized that he was the suspect. And it was inside the museum is when he shouted, "Free, free Palestine."
Now, was he still carrying his weapon at that point? Do we know?
No, police believe that he did discard the weapon because he later pointed out where it was to the federal authorities.
Okay, so he knew he was going to be apprehended. In fact, perhaps was looking to be apprehended. You know, that term death by cop might have been an option.
It could have been, or it could have been that he just was, he was focused on what he was going to do to make his statement by shooting this couple and then basically, you know, surrendered or turned himself in.
Now, we heard a little of what Ambassador Leiter had to say about the couple themselves. What sort of other reaction have you been hearing from both the Oval Office and on Capitol Hill in general?
Well, President Trump has issued a statement on his social media saying that he will do everything he can to fight anti-Semitism. As you heard the Israeli ambassador say that he has spoken to President Trump himself. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has also released a statement condemning the attack and condemning what he's calling the delegitimization of Israel and what they are doing in Gaza.
It's interesting even listening to the ambassador there saying, you know, that people should not be pursuing political gains by murder. And the irony of that, given what's going on in Gaza, will not be missed by many people in this country, certainly.
No, absolutely not. And again, I mean, it's a sad event for, obviously, you know, this young couple and what happened there. But again, this is a fraught political situation.
Now, before I talk to Scott for an analysis of all that went on yesterday, again, the immediate reaction in the United States to a second ambush by Trump. I mean, we've had obviously Keir Starmer and Emmanuel Macron and Giorgia Meloni going to the Oval Office and not being ambushed. But we had Zelensky being ambushed by Vance and by Trump. And now we had Ramaphosa also being ambushed. And it definitely was an ambush. What are people saying?
Well, again, it is astonishing. And that's what people here in the United States are calling it, an astonishing attack. And one in which, again, the video and the papers that they showed claiming that there's been a genocide against white farmers, you know, the video was not what it represented. It was actually a video of a protest. Those were not graves or videos of graves. And the claim that thousands of white farmers have been killed, you know, is demonstrably false. But again, it fits into a pattern. And if you think about it, it's something that Vladimir Putin has done and done very well, in which he will host public events specifically to humiliate people. And this is something that Donald Trump has done at least twice with foreign leaders.
All right. Well, no doubt there'll be more reaction to that. Terry, thank you very much for bringing us up to date on what was happening in the ground in the United States. But going back to that Oval Office ambush, it started with a journalist asking Trump what it would take for him to believe that a white genocide is not happening in South Africa. And President Ramaphosa got his answer in first.
Well, I can answer that for the president. It's,
no, seriously. I'd rather have him answer.
Yeah, I'll do the answer.
It will be, our president will respond to you. Yeah, thank you, Mr. President.
It will take President Trump listening to the voices of South Africans, some of whom are his good friends, like those who are here. When we have talks between us on the quiet, around a quiet table, it will take President Trump to listen to them. I'm not going to be repeating what I've been saying. I would say if there was Afrikaner farmer genocide, I can bet you these three gentlemen would not be here, including my Minister of Agriculture. He would not be with me. So it will take him, President Trump, listening to their stories, to their perspective. That is the answer to your question.
But, Mr. President, I must
President
say that
Trump.
We have... No, wait. We have thousands of stories talking about it.
Sure.
And we have documentaries, we have news stories.
And then this happened.
Excuse me, turn the lights down. Turn the lights down and just put this on. It's right behind you. Johan.
There's nothing this parliament can do. With or without you, people are going to occupy land. We require no permission from you,
it's
from the president, from
this
no
moment.
One. We don't care. We can do whatever you want to do.
So for the next 5 minutes, a compilation of videos played, which Trump said proved his claims of a genocide against white Afrikaner farmers. And when that was finished, he turned to printed news articles.
Look, these are articles over the last few days. Death of people. Death. 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 Horrible death. Death. I don't know.
But you know that
to pick anyone, white South Africans are fleeing because of the violence and racist laws. And this is all, I mean, I'll give these to you.
When you
say, what would I like to do? I don't know what to do. Look at this. White South African couples say that they were attacked violently.
More evidence, according to Trump, of a genocide in South Africa. President Ramaphosa acknowledged that there is crime in South Africa, but that the majority of victims are black, something Trump cut him off saying the farmers are not black. One strong rebuttal to Trump's point came from Zingiswa Losi, a South African trade union leader who was part of that South African delegation.
Recently, President, as you were preparing to come here on the news, in KwaZulu-Natal, there was a handover of farms, and white farmers were saying, we are donating the land, but also there's a willing buyer, willing seller in South Africa. So there is no expropriation without compensation, but it is a willing buyer, willing seller. And that white farmer was even saying, President, that they The government is even paying more in buying the land than what the land is worth of. And I think those are the realities, President, that we must say that we need to address, of course, but also the importance of agriculture linked to AGOA. People rely on it, and I think, as Retief have said, for survival and living. But lastly for me, President, is also the issue of the crime statistics. There is no doubt about it that we are a violent nation, you know, for a number of reasons, and we're not condoning anything. But also, if you go into the rural areas where black majority are, you would see women, elderly, being raped, being killed, being murdered. And these are black elderly women that would be found throat slits, raped multiple times, and all of that. And the problem in South Africa, it is not necessarily about race, but it is about crime. And we think that we are here to say, how do we both nations work together to reset, to really talk about investment, but also help us in how we can have the technology and everything that is needed, President, to really address the levels of crime that we have in our country.
And for most of that, Trump sat sullen-faced, not making eye contact with the trade union leader. Scott Lucas joins us now. Scott, good morning.
Very good morning to you, Pat.
So what do you make of that ambush in the Oval Office? It was quite obviously prepared, because that video, it couldn't be magicked up at short notice. This was a plan.
Yeah, and that's what was striking to me, Pat, because if I can take you back to the February 28th ambush on the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, I think that was very much the vice president, J.D. Vance's initiative. I don't think Donald Trump knew necessarily that was coming, although, of course, he then joined in on the assault on Zelensky. This isn't just a question of Trump going off script to attack South Africa and the president, Ramaphosa. This would have been set up by Trump advisors, because not only do you have the video where we heard the clip from it that had been set up, but also Trump had, you'll remember, these copies of of what he claimed to be articles about death in South Africa. In fact, we know that at least one of the articles was about death in Congo, which is a very different country. So there were advisors who would have set this all up, and the question is which advisors. I will mention, without making any direct connection, that Elon Musk was in the room, and Elon Musk, as you know, is South African-born and has a great deal of grievance with that country. But it is also clear that for months, the Trump administration and Trumpist activists have been on this propaganda campaign about it's whites who are discriminated against in South Africa, it's whites who are the victim of violence, going as far as to use a phrase which Trump repeated yesterday, which was white genocide. I think the open question here is what purpose does that campaign serve?
There was no comment, of course, on what Musk was wearing in the Oval Office. That was notable yesterday, even though he looked, as usual, a bit like a tramp. The question of his background, I mean, his father claimed that he shot three people who were home invaders to save his daughter, 6-year-old daughter, years and years ago from what he thought was going to be ritual murder and rape. That must have impacted profoundly on the Musk family, and it's probably something Musk carries with him.
Yeah, I will hasten to add that Elon Musk, you know, is at least distant, if not estranged, from his father, Errol Musk. And I would also say that there's some very interesting family history, and that Errol Musk eventually becomes the romantic partner of his stepdaughter. So there's a lot of twist in terms of the Musk family history. I think to keep this specific, Elon Musk, whatever the background of his father here is, has again pushed this disinformation about white genocide in South Africa. He's done it in his own words. He's done it by retweeting others on his platform X. And why, you know, whether Elon is doing this for personal reasons, whether he's doing it as leverage, for example, to get South Africa to purchase Starlink systems, and the South African government is saying it will try to purchase those systems, you know, one can only speculate. What I would say here is that this idea of race baiting, which has been used for many years by Trump supporters, for example, with the idea of replacement theory. In other words, that whites are being replaced by minority groups in the United States, and it's part of a conspiracy. This is now being extended to race baiting in places like South Africa at a time when the country still, a generation after apartheid, is going through a great deal of tension and trying to deal with serious economic and social issues.
Back to, you know, that video that was shown and obviously had to be prepared in advance, even if it did contain stuff that simply wasn't accurate or relevant to what the contention was by Trump. I mean, where is South Africa to produce a video of the United States with school shootings, with, you know, mostly black victims of violence, be it white on black or black on black violence, of January the 6th, for heaven's sake, where they were threatening to hang the vice president? I mean, talk about the kettle calling the pot black.
Yeah, I mean, fingers can be pointed. I think to take this into a slightly different direction, Pat, let's talk about what the South African response was yesterday, at least through Ramaphosa and through those other South Africans who were there, including the trade union leader who spoke so eloquently and the journalist. What was interesting was they did not try to come back at Trump with invective. They did not try to come back at Trump by saying, look at all the murders in the United States. Look at the disparity in ownership between whites and blacks in the United States. Look at your own statements about blacks and about Africa, Mr. Trump. Instead, Ramaphosa was very courteous, very polite, and his pushback was to the extent that you heard in that clip, which is talk to South Africans about what is actually happening, which Trump won't do, of course. And then it's interesting in the afterwards, because Ramaphosa and Trump then met behind closed doors, the South Africans were very careful to say this was a constructive and a positive meeting, that they do not want this to escalate into South Africa being used as a whipping boy by the Trump administration when they were there, remember, to talk about trade and about Trump's
tariff. Now, I'm wondering what impact this will have if Ramaphosa and his delegation were able to point out to Trump how wrong many of the things that were offered in that video and in the news clippings were. I mean, is Musk going to get another lashing from Trump after Musk's failure to get a Trump candidate elected?
No, because if I was to break this down, I think the Trump folks will consider that a success yesterday. I think they'll consider that a success, whether or not Musk was involved, because they were playing to a certain type of voter and supporter in the United States. And they think that race baiting is productive domestically for them, especially because it takes the attention away from other issues, which are damaging to them. What I'm interested in, beyond Musk, beyond Trump, is the effect on the U.S. position in Africa. You can imagine what the commentary in South Africa is going to be today, which is a very important country, one of the leading economies in Africa, and that's going to ripple throughout the continent. Already, the Trump administration has damaged the U.S. position in Africa by shutting down the U.S. Agency for International Development, which provides billions of dollars in support for health programs, education programs, civic society programs across Africa. They have gutted the State Department's Africa staff. They have had a tour that misfired where their envoy to Africa, who just happens to be the father of Donald Trump's son-in-law, completely went around looking after his own personal interest and Trump's business interest, rather than actually dealing with diplomacy. So, you know, this actually, Pat, if you want to play this out, opens up the door to other countries that want to increase their influence in Africa at the expense of the United States. And I would start with the Chinese, who are probably the biggest winner after yesterday's confrontation in the White House.
Now, the shooting, going back to the shooting of the two young people, the Jewish diplomat and his American fiance outside the Jewish Museum in the Capitol. Obviously, that's a very tragic event and absolutely uncalled for. There's no justification for it. But you say that this shooting will now probably overshadow a statement from Netanyahu, which is very, very significant.
I mean, yeah, first, let's emphasize that two young people were murdered in Washington, Yaron Lischinsky and his fiancée, Sarah Milgram, and that murder has to be called out. What happened, what's interesting, is that the juxtaposition of this came a few hours after Benjamin Netanyahu issued a high-profile speech to the nation read it three things, Pat, that are significant. The first is he said there will be no lasting ceasefire with Gaza, that this has to end with the destruction of Hamas. He said that if there might be a temporary ceasefire to get some hostages back, but then the Israeli attacks will resume. Secondly, he made clear, and we knew this from a document leaked last weekend, that Israel is now planning for long-term occupation of Gaza, almost like the West Bank occupation on steroids, with four military zones, Palestinians crammed into three areas between them, with limited rights of movement, with limited services, and of course with the lasting damage from their attacks. And then I think the third thing is that for the first time, Netanyahu endorsed, you might remember Donald Trump's idea of moving all the Gazans out,
what's
some called ethnic cleansing. Netanyahu endorsed that. He said Trump's beautiful plan, and those are his words, not mine, would be a precondition for any discussions over the resolution of Israel's attacks on Gaza.
So he feels confident that the United States will back him all the way on this front, that there will be no lasting ceasefire, which is very depressing in spite of all the world opinion pressurizing Israel to concede in some way. It's just not going to happen, according to Netanyahu.
No, the Trump administration had already given the Netanyahu government a blank check regarding Gaza. And that is back at the start of March, when we did not move from a phase one to a phase two ceasefire, when Israel decided to resume the military assaults and to cut all humanitarian aid into the strip. The Trump administration just stepped away. I mean, their so-called envoy to the Middle East, Steve Witkoff, is more concerned with going to the Kremlin and going to talk about Iran's nuclear program. So, you know, in effect, although Israel's under pressure elsewhere, they're not happy with Trump over the talks with Iran, for example, they've got carte blanche to do whatever they want in Gaza, at least with respect to the United States, if not with respect to other members of the international community.
Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at UCD. Scott, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.